Oh, hey, I'm glad you're here. One of the byproducts of growing up in a video store is the exposure to all the amazing cover art of the VHS boxes. I mentioned in the beginning, I think in episode one, the amazing book, VHS Video Cover Art, which is by Thomas Hodge, the Dude Designs. And it's a great collection of these wonderful covers. And that's probably why one of my favorite ways to pass time was always drawing. I loved attempting to draw some of the amazing things that were on the video boxes, but also, you know, whatever I would see as a kid. And I wasn't amazing, and I'm continue to not be amazing, but I don't think that should stop you from doing anything you love, really. I mean, I'm not advocating that you take to the streets with your acoustic guitar and perform Jack Johnson covers or something like that. But look, I'm trying to be positive. We all have our weaknesses. Superman, as we all know, is kryptonite. And mine is street musicians, as well as Three Doors Down song Kryptonite. Before the internet, if you saw something that you wanted to draw on the television, you just had to do it from memory. But then the VCR came along. But now, as long as you knew when you were going to see it, you could record it straight from the TV. And then you could draw it. So now you could draw anytime, provided you were ready for the struggle. And it was a very real struggle. The battle I'm going to talk about is the day I saw Paula Abdul's music video, Opposites Attract, featuring a cartoon rapping cat named MC Scat Cat. I recommend you look up the video, and I think we'll actually post a link on the website. But I needed to draw this precocious feline, so I waited, and I taped the video, and then I had to pause it on MC Scat Cat. And then I laid down on the floor, and I would begin to draw. But one of the things that at our VCR would do is it would only remain paused for 60 seconds. So I would have to rewind it and try to pause it again in the exact same spot and then return to drawing. I don't think I'm still done with that, JK. I'll post the drawing on the IG as well for you to bask in all the glory of however old I was drawing MC Scat Cat. According to Wikipedia, the creation of MC Scat Cat was inspired by the film Anchors Away, in which Gene Kelly dances with Tom from the cartoon Tom and Jerry. But that's not the film we're exactly discussing on this episode. The film is The Ambulance, the guest, an illustrator and comic book artist, and this is VHS. Hello, and welcome to VHS. I'm your host, Dirk Marshall, and I'm joined in the studio by Layla Del Duca.
Hey.
Thank you for being here.
Thanks so much for having me.
And you are a comic book artist and a writer.
That's correct.
Awesome. People wanting to follow along visually, Layla Del Duck on Instagram, Layla Del Duca on Twitter, as well as you have a profile page on Image Comics and Helioscope.
Yes, and I also have a website. It's www.layladelduca.net. It's very hard to Google because I don't think I've set up the, I forget the name of the term where it's like search engines go here because I set that thing up.
No, I did the research and those things are the things that pop up, but I didn't see the .net, so.
Yeah, no worries.
Secretive.
It doesn't have anything on it that you can't find anywhere else on the internet by Googling my name.
Okay, perfect. And up top, I just wanted to mention that at Image Comics, you wrote Afar. And did not illustrate it.
No, I didn't. It's illustrated by Kit Seaton.
Kit Seaton. But you did draw or illustrate Sleepless and Shudder.
Correct, yes.
At Image Comics, but you didn't write those.
Yes, I didn't write those.
So you're doing both, you're both writing and you're both illustrating, but you're not doing both at the same time. Do you have any desire to do that in the future?
I do, and I am actually developing a few different pitches. The first one I'm working on is an autobio about my time growing up in Montana and then going to art school in Denver, realizing I'm polyamorous in college, and then how that's affected my relationships. And also growing up with a verbal abuser and how that's affected how my relationships as well. So that's the first one, and that's kind of more adult-themed, I would say. But then my heart truly lies with young adult graphic novels, so I would love to write and draw, do it all myself at some point.
Would you also do, previously when we spoke, you were telling me about all the people that are involved in the creation of books, graphic novels and things.
Yeah.
Would you also be the bubble person?
Lettering?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. For those of you who don't know, lettering is when the letterer takes the dialogue and they put it in the bubbles with the word balloon tails. And,
right.
Yeah, so I would be doing that myself as well. And so I'll have to teach myself how to do that because I haven't really done that too much in the past.
Yeah, that's fascinating. I just listened to the actor Matthew Gray Gubler.
Mm-hmm.
He just did a book, and he did the lettering in the book himself too. And I think he wanted it to look childlike, and I think he used his non-dominant hand for some of it.
Whoa.
Or some of the drawing. It's pretty fascinating. But yeah, I just love when people dedicate themselves to, like, I want to do all of it and see what it's like from every angle.
Yeah, me too.
Fascinating. So up top, I just got to give a shout out to my engineer and friend, my friend-engineer. We'll go with that. wait, friend-engineers, building healthy bridges. There's something there. Okay, we'll cut that out and then work on a new book. But J.L. Watkins, he knows a lot about comics and graphic novels. And when I asked him who in this city full of talented people I should speak with, he said you, and he handed me a stack of your work. So
awesome.
I just really appreciate him doing that so that we could have this conversation.
Me too. Thanks, JL.
Yeah, and he also wanted me to tell you that he thinks you're fantastic.
Aw, that is so sweet.
He couldn't be here today. He's out of town, but I wanted to pass that on. And I agree because I was looking at your work, and first I read Afar, which you wrote,
mm-hmm.
and it involves astral projection. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was fascinating. I love the story in it. And I thought, all of these books are going to be great to share with my five-year-old daughter.
Mm.
And then I opened Shudder. And I saw a snake man with a skull head rip through a person's body. And I was like, well, maybe I'll wait a couple years before we do Shudder. But that is your illustrations in that book,
mm-hmm.
and they are phenomenal.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, I absolutely love them. I love every look of every creature and character in there. The alligator people, the skeleton guy in the suit.
Mm-hmm.
What is he again?
Harrington, the skeleton butler.
Of course. yes, fantastic. So I highly recommend people check out Shudder if they don't already know it.
Thank you so much.
Who was the person that wrote that book?
Joe Keating wrote the book.
Okay.
Owen Gianni colored it. And we had two different letterers on the book. It's Ed Brisson and John Workman.
Okay.
Yeah, but I'm very, very proud of the work we did on that series.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
I loved working on it. It was so imaginative, and it was kind of like a imagination free-for-all. And
yeah,
it was awesome.
And what do you receive, say, for that project? Do you receive a page that says, like, there's a cat and it's a clock, but it's also, like, has a sword and a ninja disembowel somebody? Like, what do you get as the illustrator? Is it storybook? To like, how do you?
Yeah, it's essentially what you said, but kind of set up in a format that's very similar to a movie or television script. But instead of saying act one, scene one, it's more like page one, panel one.
Okay.
And then a description of the panel, which is like snake guy rips guy in half.
Yes.
And then dialogue could be, or like the sound effects could be squish or something like that.
Okay,
and then it would go to panel two, and then like you'd kind of repeat the same thing. So you're visually telling the artist what to draw and then also what the character is saying so that all that information combined, I can determine what kind of emotion and action and I guess like overall feeling that the page needs.
And so like in comic books, graphic novels, I don't know what the difference is, so I just keep saying them together.
Okay, well, we can just say that comic books are most commonly known as the single-issue floppies.
Got it.
Where it's like typically 20 to 22 pages long, and then graphic novels are the combined novelization of that.
Okay.
And so graphic novels typically have not been serialized, but really people can like say whatever they want. I think there's comic books that have been collected into what we call trade paperbacks, which are essentially graphic novels. They were just serialized comics first.
Okay.
And then a lot of people who are like, I draw graphic novels, that means like they never serialized their comics and they're all always just a book form. But I say that I'm a comic book artist, even though I have worked on graphic novels.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not touchy about when people like maybe mislabel, but some people are more particular, I think.
Yeah, that makes sense. It's just Okay, so for the sake of a conversation, I'll say comic book novels.
Sounds good.
Okay, all right.
You could just say comics, too.
Okay, comics like, works.
Yeah.
Okay. When you get the, does it have like it shots? Like, is it say like a exterior shot of building upward or, you know, because there's many different points of view and so many motions and things that you capture within the panels. Like, is it up to you to be like, oh no, I kind of drew it. Like he's being eviscerated, but it's like from under the entrails. Or is it like more like I picked it from a side view or?
Yeah, sometimes the writer will specify. Mm. Most of the time I've noticed that writers leave it up to the artist to find the best view for the scene. But if they already have a good visual idea of what they want, then they'll be like side view of car driving over bridge just because they know that it's going to look better or also be easier to draw maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And then when it's like the exterior of a hospital, they'll just say exterior of hospital and that's it,
right?
Kind of thing.
And then you're just like, okay,
yeah.
How do I make this interesting?
Yeah. And I think that I would be irritated if the author or the writer of each comic would tell me what kind of camera angle to use every time. That would be kind of restrictive.
Yeah, sure. Well, and I guess they just trust in your skill set.
Yeah.
You're going to deliver. So
that
makes sense. With that in mind, in the event that you ever got, say you came down with a cold or something, I thought I would bring out some of my drawings to show you, and then you could give me your feedback on those.
Oh, perfect. Okay.
Okay, so these will all be up on the Instagram account, vh.us, for people that aren't like, why is he showing pictures on a podcast? I call this one... Leave it to Zombiever. So this,
oh my God.
Leave it to Beaver. But he's clearly not well.
Yeah, he's definitely a little bit maimed.
Yeah.
Blood coming out of some like nose and mouth, eyes. Oh, there's a little bite out of his ear.
Yeah, yeah. There's a little bit there. I think that's what started it all.
Mm.
I mean, I haven't written the script yet, but if you're open to that idea, that's available.
Lovely.
There's also Mothrob Zombie versus Lady Gaga-zilla.
Oh my God.
That's pretty apparent what's happening there.
Lady Gaga, who is also at the moment Godzilla.
Yep.
And then, wait, who's Mothra?
That's Rob Zombie as Mothra. So Mothrob Zombie.
Mothrob Zombie. Yeah, that's going to be an epic battle.
I think a good tour, too.
Yeah. Good job with this art, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
You're way better than I imagined.
Oh, thanks. This is Nosferatu Pac. So I even got the tattoos right. He had his own name tattooed. And this said mom on him, but I put Vlad because I think that's who made Nosferatu.
Okay.
I'm not quite sure on the...
Wow, that's also going to be an instant hit, I think.
I don't have anybody for any of these. So any roles, you're a writer and an illustrator. This is a series. So this is Freddy Krueger, and he's just trimming one of those little trees that people...
The bonsai.
Yeah, the bonsai. So he's just trying to chill out,
maybe
have better dreams.
Yeah, this it reminds me of Edward Scissorhands. Are they friends in this universe?
They could be.
Cool.
They could be neighbors.
Mm.
Next in this is a series. I said that right. Okay, so then we have... The mummy, and he's got his fingers stuck in one of those Chinese finger traps.
He does.
Yes.
Yeah, wow, how frustrating.
I know. He's got to be just driving him crazy. And then we got the creature from the Black Lagoon, and he's got one of those things, the sea monkeys.
Oh.
And he's clearly just like, what the hell? You know, because they never work very well.
Yeah.
He's just disappointed like everybody else.
What a letdown.
Yeah. And then next up, we got the Phantom of the Opera, and he's got a little kitty piano there.
Oh, cute.
And he's sort of like, we just walked in, and he's like, what?
Wow, he must have been composing something magnificent.
Yeah, something with like two notes.
Because
my daughter has one of those pianos, and it's a real piece of crap. And then we got one of my favorites. It's Frankenstein, and he's putting together a Mr. Potato Head.
Oh, that's good. The parallels there are frightening.
Right? I have one more in that series. It's the Bride of Frankenstein, and she's got one of those Barbie doll heads that people do makeovers on.
Oh, uh-huh.
You know.
Nice. Gosh, what's she going to do with her?
She's going to make her over, I guess.
Gosh, I'm excited to see what that looks like.
Yeah. And then last, just to brighten it up a little bit, because those get a little heavy there, it's Jake Gyllenhaal and Oates.
Oh, my God.
So, and that one, for those listening,
wow.
It's Jake Gyllenhaal and,
wow,
and Oates.
Someone really needs to jump on that band name.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Good job.
Thank you.
Good job on those two.
So those are all available if you want to work together.
Okay. Or, wow. I'll let you know.
If you get sick, maybe I could jump in and throw some of that on a page for somebody.
You could totally be my fill-in artist.
Okay, perfect. Good.
My first one and probably only one. That no. Because that's not typical, you guys.
Oh. Okay. Okay. Well, I mean, you can choose your own adventure, right? I mean, that's the great part about life. But we're not just here for me to pitch you drawing ideas. The reason that we're joined today is from watching a film, and that film is The Ambulance.
Yes.
Was this a first-time watch for you?
It was a first-time watch for me.
Great. Perfect.
The trailer made it look very ridiculous. I don't typically go outside of the range of, like, Netflix, Amazon, sure, and that kind of stuff. And it was one that I'd never seen or, like, even seen advertised before. But it was magnificent.
For those that haven't seen the film, the synopsis is a comic book artist meets a woman on the New York streets. But after a quick flirtation, she suddenly collapses and is picked up by an old ambulance. He checks all the hospitals, that's the comic book artist, I guess, in the area, but the woman seems to have disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
That's the whole shebang.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think the first line should be like, after incessantly hitting on a New York City woman on the streets randomly.
Would you like to be uncomfortable and then thankful there's an old ambulance that relieves her from the situation?
Yeah.
Yeah. At the beginning, I thought, well, maybe she just collapsed to get rid of this guy.
Yeah.
You know, that's a good move. I always heard, like, you know, if someone was going to want to fight me or something, that I should just pee my pants because they would be less likely to fight me. Or I made that up. I'm not quite sure if it was advice I received.
Huh.
But luckily, I don't get in fights a lot.
So. Yeah.
At the time of this recording, you can rent The Ambulance at Movie Madness in Portland. You can stream it on iTunes, or you can pick up the Blu-ray from Shout Factory. Let's put the players in context here. We got director Larry Cohen. He also wrote the film. I think he became a director to protect his writings, I think, is the way it all worked.
Mm.
He directed Black Caesar in 73, It's Alive in 74, God Told Me To in 76, Q in 82, The Stuff in 85, Ambulance in 1990, and more, but those were just some of my favorites.
Mm-hmm.
The cinematographer, we got Jacques Haitken, He did Galaxy of Terror in 81, Making the Grade in 84, The Lost Empire in 84, Nightmare on Elm Street in 84, Nightmare on Elm Street 2, Freddy's Revenge in 85, My Demon Lover, it's a great film, 1987, The Hidden in 87, Cherry 2000 in 87, To Die For in 88, Shocker in 89, Ambulance in 90, and went on to do the 1997 classic Wishmaster. Have you seen Wishmaster?
No.
Mm. Okay.
Sorry to disappoint you. No. I haven't seen like any of these movies you're listing up.
That's usually the case.
Okay.
I mean, they're from a while ago. So unless you had like a film class that for some reason was teaching My Demon Lover, it's probably not something you're going to come across. But you should.
Okay.
Editor Claudia Finkel, she did Howling for The Original Nightmare. They're just counting the other three.
Huh.
In 88. My Mom's a Werewolf in 89, which is... back-to-back werewolves. And then she did Howling 5 The Rebirth in 89. So that's three werewolf movies in a row. And then The Ambulance in 1990, which, spoiler alert, no werewolves. However, her assistant editor credits are amazing. Beverly Hills Cop in 1984, Pee-wee's Big Adventure in 1985, Top Gun in 86, Extreme Prejudice in 87, and Beverly Hills Cop 2 in 1987.
Wow. So all massive hits.
It's pretty crazy that that run that she has together. Actors... Eric Roberts.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. He's done over 500. He has over 500 acting credits, including 30 things in post-production right now.
Oh, right.
So he's most known, I would say, for Star 80 in 1983. But I think that's going to change this year when A Karate Christmas Miracle comes out.
No.
Yeah, A Karate Christmas Miracle.
Oh, my gosh.
A real movie.
Who's doing that movie?
Eric Roberts.
Right. Well, who's...
Elsa's in it.
Not who else is in it. Who, what studio is making it, I guess?
Oh, I don't know. He's also in a sci-fi pictures movie where they, you know, they always do like Transmorphers when Transformers comes out. They're doing one that's like Monster Island, I think. And it's basically like their like ripoff of the Godzilla movie that's coming out right now.
Hmm.
Anyway, moving on from Eric Roberts' illustrious career, Janice Turner. She was in Monkey Shines in 88, Steel Magnolias in 89, Ambulance in 1990. Which is crazy to me to go Steel Magnolias and The Ambulance like after that. And then Cliffhanger in 93 And then she's most known for a little show that ran from 1990 to 95 called Northern Exposure.
Mm-hmm.
Next up, James Earl Jones. He was in Coming to America in 88, Three Fugitives in 89, Field of Dreams in 89, and The Ambulance in 1990. And I'm sure that drives people crazy that are cinemaphiles because he's James Earl Jones and he's the voice of Darth Vader.
Mm-hmm.
But these are just some films that I'd like to recommend people check out of his.
Yeah.
And then lastly, we got Eric Braeden, which we got to mention because he plays the Doctor
in
this movie. He was in Escape from Planet of the Apes in 71, Herbie Goes to Monte Carlo in 1977. Have you ever seen a Herbie the Love Bug movie?
Yeah, okay. Actually. I was just thinking about that movie the other day and wondering if it's actually good. Because I haven't seen it since I was a small child.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of those Disney films, I watched so much as a kid, and mm-hmm. I'm pretty terrified to like go back and watch them.
Yeah, yeah.
Piranha in 78, he was a swimming double.
Oh, mm-hmm. Interesting.
Which is weird because he was an actor. I don't know how he...
Huh.
Anyway, The Ambulance in 90, Titanic in 1997. But mm-hmm. during all of that time, since 1980... Eric Braeden's been on The Young and the Restless on television.
Whoa.
Yeah. And he's still on it, which is incredible.
Huh.
But anyway, those are some of the players in the film The Ambulance that we're talking about today.
Can I ask real fast, because it has been a bit since I watched
sure.
the movie. Is the doctor the cool old man that he's like next to in the hospital bed?
No. The doctor is the evil guy.
Oh, that evil
You're
guy.
You're thinking of Red Buttons.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, he's the evil guy, and actually the evil guy wasn't really the evil guy always. There was a different evil guy.
Oh, okay.
But Larry Cohen didn't think he was evil enough, so they got rid of that guy and then shot all of Eric Braeden's stuff in one day.
That's insane.
Which is so nuts, but mm-hmm. that's the way it is.
Whoa.
It's pretty crazy. Do you have any opening thoughts you want to throw out before we look at some of the beats of the film?
Yeah, the first thing I noticed while watching this is his epic hair.
Yes.
The mullet
is
amazing.
Yes. I made a note that just said Eric Roberts' hair.
Yeah.
I was like, I don't even need to write anymore. It's just so obvious. It's partly why I even started looking at this movie for the podcast is because I saw him in that first scene with it just blowing in the wind as he strolls through a sea of people that don't know they're being filmed for a movie.
Yeah.
Look, there she is. I knew I'd see her again.
Where do you want to go for lunch?
I don't care.
Thai food.
Hey, man, can't you see her? She's great. Right there.
No, where?
Because Larry Cohen did not get permits and just set up a platform and just filmed all of this in downtown New York.
That's insane.
Yeah, it's really amazing. And then they had one other camera person that was kind of running around grabbing the shots of him harassing the woman. Which...
Because it is harassment. Like, he won't take no for an answer, even though he's, you know, being friendly and stuff.
Yeah.
And
are you married or in love?
And I need to be left alone. Go away.
That's direct. You know, I knew you'd be direct the first time I saw you, which is when, you might ask. Well, every day at lunchtime, I always see you out here, and I always want to catch up with you to say hello.
Hello.
Hi, how you doing?
And she tells him multiple times she's not interested. I do find it interesting that she doesn't use the I have a boyfriend excuse that is like usually deters a lot of men.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of ruining the end of the movie for everyone who hasn't
sure.
watched it. But in the end, he finally finds out that she has a boyfriend who's like, I did all of this for nothing, but we can get there later.
Right. Well, it is a great point because I never really thought about it. If she had said that in the beginning, then you wouldn't have that reveal at the end where
it's
he's
true.
Like, I saved you. And she's like, I have a boyfriend.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, I guess I just got it in my head. I had to save you.
Would you do me a favor?
Name it anything.
Would you call Robbie for me and tell him what happened?
Robbie.
My boyfriend.
And then maybe she never would have been saved and the evil guy
yeah.
would be doing evil things all the like still.
There's an alternate movie where like he's like, hey, do you want to go out? And she's like, no, I have a boyfriend. And then she collapses and he doesn't even know and just goes about his day. He's just he's actually drawing the rest of the movie
yeah.
and working and
yeah.
later reads in a newspaper that she's vanished. And he's like, oh, that sounds familiar, but
mm-hmm.
we just had a, you know. Quick little chat on the side of the street.
And then I'll be like, this movie was very true to life because all he did was sit at his desk and draw.
Yeah, there you go. You'd be like, this is exactly what it's like.
Yeah.
Except 5 hours shorter than my work day or whatever.
Right.
The stuntman in the film was Spiro Razatos, and I wanted to mention him because there's a lot of stunts in the film, jumping out of the way of the ambulance, jumping also out of the way of the ambulance. That happens a few times. There's some horses that come out of a door. It couldn't all be ambulance work. I mean, you got to have some horses in there for some reason. But Spiro has a crazy list of credits, and I don't often think about stuntmen, unfortunately, when I'm watching movies. But for this, I thought, well, let's just see. And turns out Spiro's done so much work. He did Tough Turf, Police Academy 2, Return of the Living Dead, Goonies, Back to the Future, Pee-wee's Big Adventure, Real Genius, and Commando, all in 1985.
Whoa, that's a what?
That's 1 year.
I'm sorry, I'm laughing so much.
Yeah.
I'm so
It's a lot of times he was jumping away from things.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, crashing on things. I don't know. So he I think is still working more as a consultant on like all the Fast and the Furious movies, which was fascinating to hear about how those are made, because none of those cars that the stars are sitting in have engines. Those are all close-ups, and then everything that's the feet working the pedals is just like a PA or somebody. So it's not Ludacris's foot pushing on the gas pedal. And then all the car sequences are driven actually by stunt coordinators on a...
Oh, crazy.
Yeah, so they can actually make those movies, I think, pretty fast because...
Yeah.
And furious because they can shoot at different locations. Okay, anyway. Also in the film, I just wanted to mention that there's a lot of improvisation, which is interesting because Larry Cohen wrote the whole thing and then directed it so that he can control his writings. But then he also is very sort of fluid in that if someone has an idea, he just kind of like, oh, okay, let's go with that if he's interested in it. So some of the things that were improvised in the movie were the when the paramedics arrive to help Eric Roberts after he's been beat up, and then the punks and the paramedics fight.
Yeah.
That was something from Eric Roberts, apparently.
Whoa.
The part where the cop is being called Jughead, that was improvisation.
Oh, right, the Jughead joke.
Yes. Even though there's already a Veronica thing going through the movie, they didn't have the Jughead joke until they were shooting.
Clever.
And then the end, when Red Buttons throws the bedpan of pee on the villain guy, that was improv.
No, piss! That was dirty.
Oh, good.
From Red Buttons.
Whoa.
So some improv pee work from Red Buttons, which is pretty amazing.
Good thing it probably wasn't real pee.
Right.
Otherwise, I'd be pissed.
Yeah. There it is. Perfect. And that's the show. yeah, so I do have a couple notes here about Eric Roberts' flowy hair and how it's like a lion's mane. Which is so true. But my favorite scene in the whole movie, and the reason that I wanted to program it into the show and to speak with you, is a very specific scene that happens after the woman has collapsed. And Eric Roberts needs answers. So what he does, he decides to use his very specific set of skills as a comic book artist to draw her and take her image to James Earl Jones.
Yeah.
Which is not helpful.
Because he draws her like a comic book character,
yes.
Which is as if most everyone who's read comics knows that it's stylized.
Yes.
It's not photorealistic.
Mm-mm.
So she looks like she could be any dark-haired brunette with like blue eyes and white skin.
Yes.
Well, if I don't finish 11 panels by Friday, I will. This is her, Lieutenant.
I know her. Yeah. Veronica in Archie. She looks like Veronica.
No, she doesn't. Veronica's got bangs.
And James Earl Jones is just frantically chewing bubblegum and just like, like, this is the lady? And they're like, he's like, yes. And they're like, we can't do anything with this. Just that scene alone, I'm like, this, people need to see this because it's wild.
It is. And then it gets wilder because he... After he gets rejected with help from James Earl Jones, he goes to the street and starts showing people on the street this image. Like, have you seen this girl? And then like he has a large drawing of her.
Yes, a bigger one.
A bigger drawing, like a poster size of her.
Have you seen this woman? Have you seen this woman? Have you seen this lady?
And then this other woman, she's like, or she actually notices it, and she's like, oh, I know exactly who this is. This is my roommate.
Yes.
And it's like, anyway, it was just really, it was hilarious.
Well, she's mad about it, too.
She is,
which I'm like, yeah, You really stick it to this weirdo that's got a giant cartoon picture of what could be anybody or your roommate.
Yeah, so I do think that her anger is warranted.
Why are you walking all over Fifth Avenue with that?
You've been sneaking looks on me, haven't you?
I'd like an answer.
Okay. She hasn't been to work in a couple of days. And you're worried, right?
Well, you seem really well informed.
Thank you.
Have a pina colada?
Bring her a pina colada. She's a diabetic, isn't she?
She usually didn't tell people that, especially strangers.
Well, she trusts me. Why can't you?
Because yeah. If, like, let's say that it actually did look like her roommate and
right.
We believe that it does or whatever. It's really creepy for
yes.
a guy to go around showing a picture of this girl and not knowing the relationship between this random guy and
yeah.
her roommate, because her roommate's obviously never mentioned this guy to her. She never met him before he hit on her on the street.
Right. Yeah.
And so if her roommate's missing and there's this weird guy looking out looking for her, I would be equally
yeah.
as like...
Well, it's creepy.
It is creepy, yeah.
Nowadays, I'm sure someone would just post the picture on their Instagram or a Tumblr or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
But they would be like, you know... equally upsetting.
Yeah.
To just be putting someone else's image out there and be like, hey, how do I find this person?
Mm-hmm.
It's a little creepy.
Yeah. I think that most people these days would give up after they couldn't find the person in the hospital.
Right.
Because they would logically think like, oh, maybe she gave me a fake name. Maybe
yeah.
like well, I didn't know her last name because I couldn't hear it when she was driving away. Like people would give up for a stranger. They
yes.
wouldn't care as much as he did.
Yeah, it's pretty worrisome, actually.
Yeah.
It's very disturbing, but, you know, I guess maybe that was the time. That's how people were meeting.
Yeah.
And
well, yeah, maybe it is a sign of the times there.
I mean, some of it. I'm sure if you look at it at the time when it was made, which seems late for the way that he's approaching the woman, but, you know, a lot of the 80s movies are very questionable, especially the comedy farces, because there's things in those movies that... you would never do now.
Mm-hmm,
but
yeah.
in the 80s, they're like, that's what they do, panty raids and stuff. But like,
I guess
now
that
you're
would
like,
be typical back
you know, it's like you kind of have to watch films sort of about when they were made.
Right.
I definitely have some favorite movies that I've rewatched later and been like, oh, this is highly problematic.
Yeah.
It's yes. very difficult to. And, you know, when you go to show someone the film, then you have to be like, just a heads up.
Mm-hmm.
I know this happens in this, but... you know, we can
yeah.
have a dialogue about it and about why it was there or if it, you know, helps forward the story in a lot of things, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But in this case, that is the whole story. He's got to find this woman and he's got drawings. It's important to note that this character situation, I did want to ask, if your significant other disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
What style of drawing would you do?
I would do it in a photorealistic style because I do think that I have a lot of his face memorized. I think I wouldn't do a perfect job, but I would do a way better job than a stylized
right.
comic
Well, you
book
also have pictures and things. Eric Roberts just has his memory.
Yeah, that's true.
So,
but even, I will argue, and maybe this is, you know, raising me up, but I do think I have more like enough skills that I
sure.
could do shading and like proportions and
yeah.
features better than him.
Yes.
Better
well,
than he did.
From the work that he did in the film, I would say you are a far more accomplished artist than what he was showing there.
Thank you.
I mean,
thank you so much.
You're welcome. Put that on your resume. Better than Eric Roberts in The Ambulance.
Yeah.
Okay.
You're hired.
They're like, why do you keep writing this on all the, like, when you go to the cons and stuff?
Right.
Just, thanks for buying this. I'm better than Eric Roberts.
Yeah.
It's really mad about Eric Roberts. Maybe she saw that Karate Christmas movie that's coming out. Also of note is this is Stan Lee's first film.
Yes.
He plays an actual role of himself.
Yeah.
Which is pretty interesting. And in the film, Stan... talks with Eric Roberts, and Eric Roberts says, you know, thanks for helping me get started and everything, and that's all wonderful. But what we don't know is how you got started. So how did you get started?
Nice segue.
Thank you very much for noticing.
Well, how I got started in comics is, like, starts half a year after I graduated from art school. I went to college at the Rocky Mountain College of Art and Design in Denver, Colorado. And I didn't think being a comic book artist was an actual profession because I never really met them. But after graduating with a bachelor's in illustration, I met Zach Howard, and he's an amazing comic book artist. And
okay.
He basically was like, if you work really hard, if you sacrifice some of your social life, you too can make it comfortable living in comics. And I loved the medium all my life. And I didn't really want to paint illustrations anymore. I was more fascinated with doing sequential art.
Okay.
So at that point, I started gearing my style towards that. And gradually, I met people who had me work for free, you know, and then, like, those jobs led to, like, crappily paying jobs, but
okay.
still paid jobs. And, like, those jobs led to something a little bit better. So my career climbed a little bit like that. And so 5 years after I officially started trying to make comics for a living, I got a job working on Shudder with Joe Keating for Image Comics. And that's when my career actually took off, because it was in the public eye. Like, before that, I was doing mostly self-published work or work for small publishers that didn't really have the distribution outreach that Image Comics does.
And how did he find you, or did you?
I would say I found him because I went to New York City Comic Con in 2012, and I went there to find publishers or artists or writers who wanted to work with me.
Mm-hmm.
And he was one of the only writers who was like, yeah, I want to work with you right now. Your stuff is really great.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and so
how excited were you at that point?
Really excited.
Yeah.
I mean, I wouldn't let myself feel like, job done. Like, this is definitely
going
to happen, because a lot of stuff that people say is going to happen doesn't happen to you.
Of course.
So I made sure to email him a lot after that. And then, like, I think half a year after I met him, he's like, here's Shudder, like, do you want to work on this? And I was like, yes. And he's like, good, because Image Comics already wants to publish it. Let's just start drawing this and, like, make a cover. I'll send you a script next week, kind of thing. Yeah, so luckily that worked out.
That's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
I love that. I just love, like, when I love to hear stories about people believing in people or seeing them, you know, like seeing your work and being like, I see what you're capable of. Let's do something.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're, you know, not perceptive. What's the word? Perseverance?
Mm.
Dedication. To to keep contact and keep that, you know, be like, hey, remember, I can draw mm-hmm. alligator butlers or whatever you need.
yeah.
And I think that's so wonderful and you know, helpful for people to hear that, like, you had a 5-year
mm-hmm.
run of, like, getting better or figuring out what you wanted to do and then getting the opportunities to actually do it. So then after Shudder first began being a thing, how long between you writing Afar or doing a Sleepless?
So during Shudder, I did start taking some side gigs. Like, I did a Scarlet Witch issue and then an issue of The Wicked and Divine, all while drawing a monthly comic, which was insane. Like, I can't, right now I'm just so, like, tired and older and burnt out, you know, that I, excuse me, can't imagine doing that right now. But I had the stamina for that then. And then I think towards the end of Shudder, Joe was like, well, I think I was just talking to Joe about how I eventually want to write and draw my own thing,
mm-hmm.
but I don't have time to draw because I'm working on Shudder. And he's like, well, why don't you just write something for someone? And I was like, what? And that's a possibility or whatever.
Yeah.
And so, I don't know, that got my gears working in my head. I knew I wanted to work with Kit Seaton on something. She's someone I went to art school with, and I've always loved her work. And I wanted to, like, shove her into the industry because she hadn't really done anything that people were looking at a lot. So she thankfully said yes to working on a sci-fi fantasy adventure comic thing.
Yeah.
And then I pitched it to Image and they were on board, even though I didn't even have, like, a good outline for them.
That's so great.
It's like, I'm very grateful for Eric Stevenson's faith in me because I got to do this book. Anyway, so I wrote Oh, and I also hired Tanika Stotts for editing work because I like admitted that I don't know what I was I didn't know what I was doing writing wise, but
what does an editor do for a comic book?
There's like two different kinds of there are two different types of editors typically in comics. One which is like a scheduling kind of editor, making sure that the team is on schedule, being like, you needed to turn the script in yesterday, what's going on? And then one where I prefer to have, which is the one who actually looks over scripts and tells me what's wrong with it. And Tanika was amazing at that. She would tell it to me straight. Like, the first chapter was awful. Maybe not awful, but, like, there were so many problems with it. Okay. And I took all of her feedback and changed it. And she's like, good job. Like, you instigated everything that I said you should change, and it's so much better for it. And I'm like, I agree. So she did a really hands-on approach with that, and I really learned a lot. And I think the book is way better having her on the team.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. So in those situations, you kind of learn from the editor a little bit about how to construct maybe the first chapter next time?
Yeah, I think that a mix between her helping me and then also since then I've read a bunch of storytelling books and having a whole book and knowing what it takes now to do it, like mainly doing more outlining and world building before I even start writing anything. Yeah, like I think that I'm going to do a way better job the next time.
Mm.
Yeah.
I really liked Afar.
Thank you.
I particularly liked the astral projection aspect of it, because if I just was flipping through it, I would be like, oh, why are there suddenly these like creatures with six eyes? And then, you know, you have all of these different like worlds or things existing on the page, but you have this through line of like real relationships, which I thought was very enjoyable.
Thank you. Yeah, my favorite stories are the ones where it's about the characters' growth and stuff. So, wait, that was said kind of stupidly, but I like a good character arc where the person is someone else at the first part of the book, and then they like improve themselves, or they fall into horribleness by the end of the story. Like, I love that transformation.
Yeah.
And with young adult stuff, I find it really important to have like a good moral about how to be a good person.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. Like, I love that stuff. Miyazaki's great at that.
Yes.
It's a lot of stuff that I learned in Star Trek. Like, Star Trek also has those core values.
It's something I never really paid attention to until I had my daughter.
Mm.
And then I suddenly had this huge appreciation for when there's even just one line in a movie where I'm like, oh, that's a great message.
Yeah.
Like, you know, for people. Because, you know, when you're a kid, you are so full of like wonder and innocence, and as a parent, you know all the other side of everything and how awful the world can be.
That's so true.
So you just really appreciate, you know, that. And so, yeah, I totally understand.
Awesome.
Whereas before, I was just like, yeah, just let the terrible things happen to people. And I just love that. Also in the film, we have actual comic book artists.
Yeah.
So Larry Hama is in it. He wrote G.I. Joe, The Real American Hero, and he worked on Wolverine and Elektra, as well as creating Bucky O'Hare.
Awesome.
In a few scenes, which is great for comic book artists to get to see themselves on the screen, not played by an actor that's like, you know, oh, I'm drawing a picture, you know.
Yeah.
And it's like something terrible. It's like, oh, he's going to work mostly, or leaving work in the scene. So it's like, I think that's cool.
It's super cool. And he was the one who actually had speaking lines, right?
Yeah, he had, I think, one or two lines
awesome.
In there. Yeah, and I suppose there's a couple other artists. I could find nothing online of who they are.
Mm.
So I just drew pictures of them, and I just put them outside my house, and I just go, do you know who this person is? To anyone that drives by.
Right.
Hopefully that's not creepy to anybody.
Did you ever find out who drew the pages of artwork that are in the movie?
No, I can't find that either.
Okay.
But I'd imagine Stan knew.
Yeah.
Maybe it was Larry. Larry
Hama.
Maybe. Might have been. That would be great to know.
Mm-hmm.
If anybody knows, email me. Who inspired you to, who inspired you to draw in your style, I guess?
Are my stylistic influences?
Yes, that's the great way to say it.
Sorry,
my version, not as articulate, but yes.
That totally makes sense. Well, I'll go first, and then you have to go next because you showed me some of your drawing.
Oh, right.
But my stylistic influences are three different guys. The first one is Mark Schultz, who did Cadillacs and Dinosaurs, a.k.a. Xenozoic Tales, among other things. And he is such a pro. He does really cool page layouts. He has a nice mix between like dry brush work and sharp like really crisp line work.
Mm.
And his stuff is really great. And then Mike Mignola is also an influence. His composition and
the Hellboy guy?
Yeah, the Hellboy guy.
Does he have other things that he's done? Because that's mostly what I've heard.
Yeah, I'm not sure if he's created other stuff outside of the Hellboy universe, but I know that he worked on the Dracula comic book adaptation.
Okay.
He worked on Favard and the Grey Mouser and other things I can't remember. Perfect. I think some stuff for like Marvel and DC, I'm sure.
You could just make up things because I wouldn't know. You could just be like, oh, Third Wednesday he illustrated, Seven Feathers for Heather. You know, just whatever.
Nice.
And I'll be, oh, that's great. He does good work.
I missed out on that opportunity to spread rumors about him working on things he never did.
I guess it's bad for you. I could say whatever I want, but I shouldn't involve real people. Right.
No, it's cool. Everyone knows we're joking.
Right.
I hope. Okay, so, and then the third guy whose work I look at a lot is Sean Murphy. He also does like a lot of dry brush work and like sketchy stuff, yet it looks crisp at the same time. And I like a mix between really polished mixed with kind of sketchier work. And so that's kind of what I tried to develop with my style. And I finally was able to put it all together in Shutter. And so I would say that's when my style finally started developing.
Yeah. And what is dry brush work?
Dry brush work is, so instead of a solid black line of ink that you put on your paper,
right,
you're taking a lot of the moisture of the ink out. So you're like dabbing it on paper towel and then you're putting it on your paper. So there's less ink, therefore like it comes out with a grainy streak instead of like a solid line. You have a lot of like variation. I don't know if I've ever tried to describe what that looks like.
I just
verbally
know most of us wouldn't know what I'm just like. I'm picturing a dry paintbrush and I'm like, that doesn't seem like it's going to do much.
Yeah, but it's like if you are painting your walls and you don't put enough paint on your brush, it comes out kind of streaky and imperfect.
Do you get like motion from that, or what is the effect that you're trying to communicate by?
Oh, good question. Well, I mean, it ranges. Like, it feels different for what you're using it for. So I would say it varies. It really depends on what you're doing. It is a good way to shade because if you're afraid of putting solid blacks on a page for a shadow, you can just do that instead.
Okay.
It's good. It adds a little bit more grit. So if you want a dirtier looking page or person, you can just like dry brush it and it looks like, I don't know, dirtier.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that just like scratches the surface. It really has so many things you could do with it.
Mm. Do you do a lot of stippling? Just
no.
No, okay.
That takes forever. I've done it before, but no. For comics, when you're like already putting in way more work than you were worth. Like,
not a good idea. Yeah. And then when I was talking to JL prior to this recording, he had some questions about helioscope. So I was hoping you could talk a little bit about what helioscope is.
Yeah, helioscope is a like a comic book collective in downtown Portland. It used to be known as Periscope Studios, but now we call ourselves Helioscope. So we have, I think, around 30 comic book creators / illustrators / graphic designers and animators who have studio space in one office building area in downtown Portland. And I work there like 2 times a week. Because it's nice for me to get a mix between working from home and then working around other people. Because working from home is, it can get kind of lonely and stagnant.
Yes.
Sometimes. The members that you might know about, if you're like well versed in comics, are Steve Lieber, who did Whiteout, Terry Dodson, who does a lot of work for Marvel and DC, There's a guy named Ron Chan who draws the Plants vs. Zombies comic, and then Kat Ferris, she did My Boyfriend is a Bear graphic novel. And then there's, like, internet... it's interesting working at Helioscope because Dylan McConis and Erica Moen are earlier influences of mine.
Ah.
They did web comics back when I was reading them, first started reading them online. So there's a range between, like, web comic to print comic and everything in between. There's even a science illustrator there. And then some people who just write, like Jeff Parker, who also draws but mostly writes. He's in the studio. So It's so cool. There's so much inspiration there. We get to talk shop every day. If we have problems with the publisher, we can be like, hey, did you guys run into the same problem? Let's share notes. And then if any of us need reference photos, then we can ask each other to pose for pictures.
Nice.
Yeah, it's a really positive thing. And also we have interns a few times a year. So if any of you guys who are listening think that you want to make the next step in your comic book career, look
Great.
Up Helioscope mentorship program. And we do have four times a year, I think we have the opportunity to apply to that.
And it sounds like it's just a great community for mm-hmm. all of these artists who be in one area.
Yeah.
Which
yeah.
is pretty awesome.
It is. It's really cool. I've never seen anything like it.
Yeah.
It's like art school, but with professionals. So, yeah, I don't know what I mean by that, but
that's, I mean, I think anytime you can bring together like-minded creative people, it kind of creates something special.
Yeah.
My wife has a hot sauce company and there's a lot of makers, you know, in Portland. We figured more than most cities. And mm-hmm. so just last weekend, she decided to invite everyone over. And so everyone came over, and the only caveat was that you had to bring a dish made with someone else's sauce.
Oh, cool.
So it just instantly became like this super heartwarming potluck of everyone like putting all the food out, and all the kids went straight to the backyard and were playing together. And like,
aww.
I think our brains make things very adversarial sometimes. And mm-hmm. in the creative world, it's so ridiculous to think like that everyone at Helioscope would be in competition with each other
yeah.
or something when they're all just making their own things or working on projects.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's always, I think, really lovely to remind ourselves that, like, actually everyone's kind of doing their own thing,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it's...
It's so true, especially, and you guys might run into this too because you work from home, but
yeah.
if you work alone too long, you kind of get a skewed view of what everyone else thinks or does
sure.
with their lives. And
yeah.
so getting out of the house and seeing that you're not alone in this feeling with
yeah.
your other people you work
oh,
with.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's really good.
There's days when we're not doing markets where Sarah will be like, when's the last time you left the house?
Yeah.
And I'm like, I don't know. But I've been listening to podcasts, so I'm talking to people. And she's like, that's not talking to people. That's listening to other people's conversations. So,
yeah.
I'm like, okay, we should go outside or something. And I realize that I've been inside too long. But
mm-hmm.
And the question that JL had was, if somebody had a project, they're like, I have these 8 issues or pages or whatever it is, like, would they contact someone at Helioscope, or is that, like, how does that work?
Well, what we typically tell people to do is go to the website and fill out this contact form we have.
Awesome.
But also look at the artwork. That's an example of every...
Sure.
Wow, that was kind of worded stupid. Go to the website, check out everyone's profile,
sure.
and if you like anyone's style, then you can be like, I have this 8-page project.
Mm.
I love Ron Chan and Kat Ferris's artwork most. Are they available or interested in doing this? Here's how much I'm offering for page rates. This is the project deadline. And
okay.
then they can forward it on to the artist from there. Sometimes it's like a mass inquiry, like, we really need storyboard artists. Is anyone in your studio available or interested, because I don't know, whatever, for whatever reason. So it's, and then sometimes the whoever's available first, like larger scale projects, will
yeah.
team up to get a job done, and they'll split the profits from that.
That's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
Yeah.
It sounds pretty unique. Do you think there's a lot of Helioscopes in the United States?
As far as we know, no. And I think that when we do hear of comic book studios, none of them are nearly as large as ours.
Yeah.
Yeah, and, like, we don't have those 30 people all working under the same roof all
right.
the time. It's typically anywhere between 2 to 10 people on the studio at any given day.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas with other studios, maybe they have like 5 members and they come in every day to work.
Cool.
But yeah, we don't hear about really anyone else at that scale.
But I guess if you were there and you needed to borrow a pen or a dry brush, somebody could loan you some.
Oh, yeah.
Or maybe some gum. Speaking of gum, James Earl Jones is an impressive gum chewer in this film.
It's true.
He chews gum the entire time,
mm-hmm.
feverishly.
Yeah.
Comic books? You make up comic books?
Well, somebody has to do it.
I used to love the old joke books years ago, especially the classic comics. They got me through high school. But the stuff today, just too bizarre, too weird. Like it's geared for kids who are whacked out of their fucking minds. Comic books scare me nowadays.
Well, you must scare easily. I mean, for a cop.
And has one of the greatest deaths, maybe ever, because he chews gum and then he seizes up and then chews gum and then dies. It's an amazing, amazing feat.
Damn it, I missed that part.
Yeah.
I didn't miss it. I forget what that part.
Yeah, it's amazing. I'm sure it's on YouTube.
Oh, I should rewatch
it. But I was just curious what kind of gum you thought he was chewing.
Oh, okay. So it's the 80s, right? 90s.
It's just turned 90.
Okay.
So it was probably shot in 89.
So I only think I know of 2 gums. So I'm going to say it's Double Mint. I think he's chewing Double Mint.
He's a stick guy.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah.
I like to think of him as a wild card. So he's all into bubble tape. That's what I think he's into. It's either that or Big League Chew. I think those are the 2 things. That he just has that super pungent fake grape smell at all times. I just would love to encounter like a hard detective that just reeks of that fake grape.
And then also just imagining him pulling it out from his pocket and like taking some and shoving it in his mouth.
Just pulling out a big long strip of bubble tape and then cutting it off like you're supposed to with the thing, which no kid ever did.
You're supposed to cut it and not rip it off?
Yeah, it just has like a little... They originally did it, so it's just like you clamp it on there.
Right.
And you're like, there, I... tore the tape off.
Okay, yeah.
It's, you know. I'm no expert, but
Well, let's go with your idea.
Yeah,
I like that best.
Thank you. So if you were the police chief, what flavor of gum do you think you would choose?
Oh, if it's currently my...
We'll go with next year.
Okay, well, I've only chewed the same gum for the past like 5 years.
Ooh,
so it's Orbit Winter Mint.
Ooh, Orbit Winter Mint.
Right? Or Winter Fresh. Or what? The one that's blue. Blue. Light blue, not dark blue. Not peppermint.
That's the only Orbit gum I've ever really had.
Oh.
It's the blue one.
Okay, yeah. I think it's the best one.
I think you're probably right.
Yeah. I have no reason to try any other gum when I do chew gum, which is not very often anymore. Anyway.
Oh, okay. But you did go through a gum patch.
Yeah, I do get coffee breath, gotta admit. But now I do Altoids because I think it's better for the environment. Gum is not good.
Right.
There's more packaging and also it degrades slower.
I just keep drinking coffee.
So that works too.
If anyone's like, you have coffee breath, I'm like, I'm literally drinking coffee right now. What do you think, I'm a psycho? I'm going to chew gum and drink coffee? I also don't have a lot of friends, so... In the film, there's also an amazing punk gang.
Taxis. Scared to take the subway?
Well, I got a roll of tokens.
Don't you think it's safe? You look like you've been in a few fights before.
I got run over.
Yeah? You're gonna get run over much worse this time.
Yes. You mentioned earlier, and I love 80s punk gangs because they're just wild. Like there'll be one guy with like a hockey mask on and someone with no sleeves and someone in all cheetah print. And they're all just like this is my gang persona.
Mm-hmm.
If you were in an 80s street gang, what do you think your gang persona would be?
Ooh, I like this question a lot.
And I mean, having seen, the variety of characters you created in the Shutter book, I was like, oh gosh, this is a great question for you because...
I think I would want to go more Mad Max Thunderdome-y about
too,
it. Have some sort of really cool bustier and really huge hair.
Yes.
Lots of piercings and the pointy studs that you add to your clothing.
Yeah.
And then some sort of tight black pants.
Yes.
And then probably not heels because I am a little bit practical and want to wear shoes that are don't have heels because that's impractical.
Yeah. You don't want to be like the too specific person, like the guy that's like, I'm rollerblades guy.
Yeah.
And then you're like in a desert and you're like, this is a terrible choice. I shouldn't have went with rollerblade guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I would go one-sided football, what do they call those?
Oh, yeah.
Shoulder pad things?
Yes, yes.
Just one side.
Okay, good.
And then maybe an arm bracelet thing up top on the other side.
Good, I'm liking this, yeah.
One fingerless glove. Yeah. And my weapon of choice would be like the tiny wrist crossbow, you know? So I'd have to like do a ridiculous pose anytime I went to shoot.
Oh, that's cool.
And it would take me a long time to like reload it. Like, I'd be really bad at it, and, like, the little rope thing would snap my wrist, and I'd be like, oh, why did I, this is terrible. But no one could see because of my one big shoulder pad.
Yeah, that sounds awesome.
Yeah, and I'd maybe go, like, Liberty spikes.
Ooh, yes. Yeah, just very cool.
Something a super labor-intensive that, like, in those films, you never think about, like, the hairdressers are making a killing in those movies because they have to re-dye the hair all the time to keep it that bright and shave their heads all the time. You never see anyone with that, like a quarter-inch grow out in those movies.
Right.
It's all like they just came from the salon.
Yeah, and I don't think they were using wigs as much as they are these days, right?
Oh, that was Manic Panic, and that was real deal stuff.
That's a lot of work, yeah.
So thanks for coming to talk about Mad Max with
me. Oh, my pleasure.
Later on, Eric Roberts escapes on a gurney in an amazing stunt that had to have been Spiro, where he's just strapped to a gurney shooting down a road as he escapes from these bad ambulances.
Yeah, the whole time I'm like, he's gonna die, but you're not because he's not because he's the main character.
But they have him hit a bunch of garbage cans, and that somehow breaks him free, which I was like, wait. Okay, I mean, I've gone with the movie up till this point, so I'll go with the garbage cans. Bring them up there, and then the ambulance appears again and runs over Eric Roberts' new love interest.
Oh yeah!
But she's not dead.
Right.
She's just injured. And then Eric Roberts is on the hood of the car and it's driving all crazy, and the doctor reaches through the broken windshield and grabs Eric Roberts, which is completely unnecessary. He's on the hood of the car. I don't know why.
But it's way more badass.
It is.
Right?
It would just cut your arm all up.
It's true.
But anyway, it looks cool. And then of course, the climax happens. And that's basically the end of this amazing, tight little film called The Ambulance. Do you think they should reboot it with Matthew McConaughey starring in the Eric Roberts role?
No, I don't think anyone should ever remake this movie.
I agree. I think it's too special.
Although
I think his mullet would be impressive, and he would be equally disturbing to see hit on a lady, or during the scene where he gets poisoned or whatever, and he's just flopping around in this apartment building.
Yeah. He would do a good job if they cast him.
I think he would agree. He would. Mm-hmm. There should definitely maybe be a movie where Eric Roberts plays Matthew McConaughey's dad.
Ooh, that's a good idea.
And that might be the Christmas Karate Miracle movie. I haven't read about the plot.
I hope so.
But we interrupt this podcast for a brief message from Eric Roberts. Oh, hey. I just thought I'd interrupt this conversation I'm having with Leila Del Duca to share some brief words from the star of The Ambulance, Mr. Eric Roberts.
Leila, Eric Roberts here. You happen to do something I admire lots. You are a comic book artist. And you were the artist for Wonder Woman, Tempest Tossed, one of our favorites. You did Dirk Marshall's podcast, and you guys talked about The Ambulance. Well, as you know, the makers of that film are comic book people. My Stan Lee story is that my wife was casting some television shows for a network, and Stan got her on the phone. He told her he wanted to send her his pitch package. Well, the package contained the concept that superheroes could make a comeback across all media, feature films, television appearances. He sounded very energetic, a little bit detached from the business, but sweet. Well, he made his dream a reality, and we were friends forever. Sounds like Dirk has great guests, and you're one of his best, Layla. All my love. Peace out.
While I have you here, I thought I was wondering if I could maybe pitch some of my graphic novel ideas.
Oh, yeah, but wait. Who are your artistic influences?
My artistic... I don't really have any. I just like to make people laugh. So that's kind of just sort of what I go for.
Okay.
When I didn't... I used to have a social work job that was 5 weeks working and then 2 weeks or 1 week break, depending on the time of the year. Mm. So I found myself with like 2 week periods, which for me personally, I have to have something creative going on or I just get more and more introverted to the point where I just don't really need to talk to anyone and I just live in my little cocoon. And so I would do these silly little drawings and then I would just put them like on Facebook or whatever. And then people were like, oh my gosh, like thanks for not just putting political stuff or whatever it was on the internet. And so that's sort of where the drawing thing came from.
Awesome.
For me. Like I was enjoyed drawing as a kid because I was an indoor kid, but I never had sort of the skill set like you have to come up with these great like, you know, angles and looks and consistency of things. It's more of just pretty random. Like I think of something, it makes me chuckle.
Right.
And then it goes that way. My wife and I, before we did the sauce thing, we would do like little crafty things and art shows and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is one example of the finished product of Mothrob Zombie and Lady Gaga. So
you came up with that idea a while ago?
Yeah.
And you just, that's so
and
good.
She would take the illustration and put it on these weird papers and then lacquer them onto different scenes.
That's pretty amazing. It's too bad you guys can't see it. There's this blaringly gold speckled background.
Yeah,
it's subtle. So good.
Yeah. So what was the question? No. Yes.
Influences. But then you were going to say something else.
That's right. I was going to pitch you some graphic novel
ideas.
Oh,
yes. Okay.
The first of which is rather short. It's more of a log line, if you will.
Okay.
And it kind of gives you a lot of freedom. So, and it's called Dogter, and it's about a surgeon who is secretly a dog, and every time he opens up a patient and there's a bone exposed, he runs the risk of blowing his cover.
So no one knows he's a dog.
No one notices, but okay. He's literally just a dog head in a hospital coat.
Uh-huh.
That's what they call it, right? Hospital coats?
Right. Totally, yeah. That's a technical term for sure.
Yes. So there's a lot of places that could go.
Gosh.
I mean, most of them are going to be the operating room.
That's a pretty intense problem to have.
I mean, I just think that you do such a great job showing like the dog's face and then sees the bone and then close up on the eyes.
Oh, yeah.
You know? And then if people would be like, oh, I get it. He's really stressed out.
Yeah.
Or could be a she.
Yeah.
I didn't specify in here. Mm-hmm. So.
Or are they?
Bay. Yeah, could
yeah.
be any. We don't know.
We don't know.
We don't know. And I'd like it to be open for everybody.
Yeah.
So anyone could be the dog.
Yes, good. Open casting.
Yes, for sure.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And then the next one is called Wenchelada, and it's about an... serious. It's about a man named Wenchel and his daughter. So it's father-daughter thing. Of course, this is coming from me. I have a daughter. It means a lot to me. He's teaching her square dancing in time for the big barn dance when he is unexpectedly crushed to death by a rogue forklift carrying 800 pounds of frozen food. By sheer will, he passes his soul onto an enchilada that finds its way onto her dining room table. Her mom demands that she eat her dinner, but she establishes a telekinetic link with her dad. And the Wenchelada, get it? Wenchel, enchilada.
Yep, yep.
And she refuses to eat him. So the mom says that you'll eat this in the morning. She's going to have to stay at that table until she eats this enchilada.
Oh, geez.
Yeah. So suddenly she finds herself in a race against time and hunger. Until with the Wenchelada's guidance, she wins the barn dance.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
That is so good.
Thank you.
So good.
I don't know if that's how barn dances work, but she wins it. And it's a tale as old as time itself, I think.
I think that's an epic tale. Yeah. Mm. Who can't relate to that?
I mean, it's got levels of humanity that I think everyone could.
I agree.
You know?
Yeah.
But you can only pick one of those two ideas. And,
okay.
And just so you know, Lifetime has contacted me about this Wenchelada idea because they were like, they love movies where, Hallmark. Lifetime makes all the depressing ones. Hallmark makes the holiday movies where it's like a kid's dad dies but still teaches him hockey and mm-hmm. the mom is remarried or whatever happens. Yeah.
Well, if I had to choose, it would be the Wenchelada.
No, oh, great.
Yeah.
Oh, perfect.
Though Dog Tour is...
It's hard to say.
Maybe that's why I wouldn't choose it.
Sure.
How am I going to elevator pitch that to people? Dog Tour.
I spelled it wrong even on here. But,
oh, really?
Yeah. But are there any common misconceptions about working in your field?
A lot of them. What are some...
Like over-glamorized, I'd imagine.
Yeah, I think that a lot of people assume like, oh, you get to do what you love for a career. So every day you're just having a great time. You know, that's not really true. It turns into a job. Like, I think I've only had maybe half a year of this golden period where I'm like, yay, every day I get to draw. I have to draw today. And I love that I have to draw today.
Yeah.
But for the most part, it takes a lot of mental focus to force yourself to be motivated to be creative.
Yeah.
It's very hard working on a project that if you're not creatively inspired by it, mm-hmm. it can be a really grueling task and you question why you're even an artist some days.
Yeah.
And then, another misconception is, or not misconception, but something a lot of people don't consider, I think, is like the physical... Or like what drawing does to your body. Like a lot of people I know have carpal tunnel, tendonitis.
Yeah.
A lot of people have a hurt back.
Mm-hmm.
Like I've had anything from like a hurt back, like, and then if I did that, I'd move to a standing desk. But because I stood at my standing desk so much, now one of my legs is like hurt sometimes when I walk in a certain way. And then I also have like various stages of tendonitis. I don't think I would need glasses now if I didn't draw and like squint at a page so much. So now I have glasses.
Slowly killing you.
Yeah,
is what
slowly
you're saying.
Killing me. So that's why it's important to work out.
Oh, okay.
I mean, for everyone,
sure.
But also like comic book artists, we typically live sedentary lives, and I know that whenever I work out regularly, my body hurts less.
Yes.
So that's stuff that we have to do. Yeah, I think that another misconception is that certain things to draw take less time than people would assume. And then other things that people assume take a short time, it takes longer. Like the time.
Crowds.
Crowds are awful. Don't ever do that. Don't ever write that for your artist unless you have to.
That's why the apocalypse things are always better because there's just like one person in like a desert.
Yes.
You can just, I'll just draw a line there. It's easy.
Yeah. Yeah. Or like if you do have to do a crowd scene, you could be like one establishing shot of it and then be like, make sure you have a close up on this character and show like one or two random strangers instead of like crowd shot this panel, crowd shot that panel, blah, 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 you know.
Different crowds.
Yeah. Make sure everyone looks different. No repeats.
Yeah. That's my new book I'm going to pitch is all crowds, no repeats. Would you like to draw it?
Fuck no.
Okay. It's 200 pages.
Oh, God. Hell.
Oh, but, I mean, it's never been done before.
For a good reason.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good point.
We could give it to an intern.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Come on. All crowds, no repeats. That's what their interns do.
Yeah.
That's how we know that you're good at your job. Give me a coffee and some more gum.
Yeah.
What's a good day like for you?
Ooh, a good day for me is waking up at a reasonable hour, like 8, and then like reading and drinking my coffee and eating breakfast for like an hour.
That's a long time to eat breakfast.
Well, if I like to read and drink my coffee slowly.
You don't set a timer for exclusively eating for 1 hour?
No, I don't. But that would have been hilarious.
Yeah. 14 croissants? Okay.
But yeah, after I, you know, that's my me time, trying to get in the mood type of thing.
Sure.
And then if I pencil a page in an hour, that's an amazing day. And then if I ink that page in like 3 hours or less, then that's an amazing day.
And are you working on a computer for this when you say ink a page, or are you working?
I'm working traditionally at that point. So let me back up and also start over and say, like, I do my layouts digitally on an iPad in Procreate.
Okay.
So on my perfect day, I've already finished all the layouts I need to worry about for a long time.
Okay. I like that.
So all I can just relax and draw and then ink.
Perfect.
And so if I finish my work by 1 or 2 p.m. For like a little bit of a later lunch, that's great. And then in the afternoon, I can lazily deal with emails, draw something for fun, like make time for a podcast interview. Sure.
Thank you.
Yeah, totally. And then adding like the fun stuff to my day, like a lot of my favorite days involve nature, like going to a park or going for a hike, going to the river.
Great city for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then eating something delicious for dinner, and then either hanging out with Chester, my boyfriend, or hanging out with friends who I rarely seem to have time for.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's a good day.
That sounds like a great day.
Thanks.
what's a bad day?
Oh, a bad day is working on the 80th page of all crowd scenes. Mm-hmm. No repeats. Yeah, that.
Yeah.
Yeah, a bad day is.
You ever have days where you just can't draw the dragon guy?
Yeah.
Like where you're just like, it doesn't look like how I want it to look.
Oh. I'm lucky to be at this point in my skills where I can draw anything I want to,
sure.
But sometimes there's days where I'm like, I just cannot give a shit about this. Mm-hmm. I have to take a day off, to take my mind off of it so that I can actually do a better job. So like I will draw things kind of badly or like worse than I normally draw them, mm-hmm. because I'm not emotionally in it.
Yeah.
So those are the days that I probably have worked, I don't know, like anywhere between 7 to 14 days in a row, and I just can't muster the energy for it. Yeah. So a bad day is that. Like a bad day is forcing myself to be creative and having a horrible time getting into it.
Sure.
With nothing good to look forward in the evening and being hungover probably because I drank the night before because I'm burnt out.
Yeah. Well, that makes sense. And it's good that you notice those patterns.
Yep. Yeah. Trying hard not to fall back into that.
Right. I'm self-medicated. I don't know why I'm still stressed out.
Yeah.
What's your favorite thing about being an artist / writer?
Ooh, my favorite thing is to be able to draw anything that's in my mind now and show it to people and they get it.
Pretty amazing.
Because that's something that was so frustrating growing up, and like reading books that really inspired me, like the Wheel of Time series, or like, we'll just stick with that. and trying to draw and being so frustrated that it didn't come out nearly as cool as I imagine it to.
Right.
And I don't know, I just love that I have this amazing communication tool that I can, like if I meet someone who doesn't speak my language, I can draw something and we can communicate that way and they'll be like, yes or no.
And that's such a great skill set to have for, like you said initially, that you wanted to write and draw something that's like autobiographical. Like you can use that skill set to be like really seen, you know, and have people like really know who you are and not just like a version of you or something that's on the internet or whatever. That's pretty amazing.
Thank you.
Is that project the big secretive project that's going on right now, or is that something else?
That's something else. That's something that I'm planning on working on after Secret Project. And for your listeners, I refer to it as Secret Project because it's not announced yet, and I'm contractually not allowed to talk about
it. You signed an NDA?
Yeah, I signed an NDA.
Ooh, I love NDAs.
Yeah. But the funny thing is I am 30 pages away from being done with this graphic novel that's awesome. 180 pages, and it hasn't been announced yet. So it's kind of crazy to, like, sometimes a book will be announced before a comic book person will start working on it, and then sometimes it won't even be announced until you're done with it. Like, I do think that I'm going to be done drawing this book before it's announced, and that's okay with me. I'm totally fine with that. It's nice to I usually work on monthly comic books where you're kind of, like, in this cycle of publishing and like okaying files and turning in files and drawing your butt off like every month over and over again. And with this graphic novel, I don't have to be in that cycle. So it's kind of nice to have a break from that for a second.
Yeah. Anyone you want to give props to? Anyone you want to give shout outs? Familiar or favorite artists, writers, people's work you imagine or in sorry, people whose work you enjoy, so that we can just tag it up here.
Yeah, I thought I was ready, but what I did was I took pictures of what I'm currently reading, not who I wanted to give props to.
Oh, so well, let me see currently reading works too, if it's something that you're enjoying. Nothing that you don't be like, I hate this person's book. This is awful.
Right. Well, I do want to say that I've been loving what this Portland cartoonist and writer, journalist is doing. And people may have heard of her in Portland. And her name is Sarah Merck. And she, her Instagram handle is Sarah Merck, and it's Sarah with an H, or I'll just spell it.
It's That's a really long handle. No,
it's spelled S-A-R-A-H-M-I-R-K, and she's doing a zine a day.
Whoa.
So she's doing a small 8-page zine a day, and like, I feel like I can relate a lot to what she's doing in her zines. A lot of it is like political stress. A lot of it is like environmental stress. Some of it's just like fun things to do while biking in Portland, and other things it's like what it's like talking to her boyfriend or something about, I don't know. It's like, it ranges from like really serious to funny stuff, and it's just all also a really crazy feat. And then who else am I following that I should, there's so many. How do I narrow this down? Oh my God. I'll just say what I'm currently reading then.
Perfect.
So I've been reading a lot of manga lately.
Okay.
Naoki Urasawa, I'm reading his 20th Century Boys series, but I think Pluto is my favorite series that he's done.
Okay.
Check his stuff out. Another comic book or manga artist I'm doing or reading. Sorry.
I just want to tell you, I've been saying manga this whole time.
Mm-hmm.
Is that common or did...
It is common to pronounce it that way, but
it's
it's manga because the Japanese vowels are pronounced A-E-I-O-U, similar to Spanish.
Okay.
So you can just think about it that way. It's manga.
Yeah.
So another manga series I'm reading is A Bride's Tale by Karu Mori.
Mm.
And then a novel book that I'm reading because I mostly read novels. No pictures.
Okay.
So, because I draw pictures all the time, I kind of like to be removed from it sometimes. So I'm reading this book called Spineless, which is about jellyfish, which I didn't think I cared about, but it's a fascinating book. The woman who writes it, her name is Julie Burwald. And it's really interesting because it deals with what jellyfish tell us in regards to conservation and climate change, but it's also written half as a memoir, and she writes really eloquently. And it's just...
From the point of a jellyfish?
No.
Oh, okay.
I can see why you might think that, though. No, it's from her point of view. Like, she was in biology, and then she had a family, and then she eventually came back to biology because she was fascinated by jellyfish. So it's a really cool book if you care about learning more really interesting facts about the ocean and jellyfish.
Sure.
Like,
I love to learn facts and then just use them in any conversation.
Yeah.
Like, that's my favorite. There's just shoehorn information into stuff to just have them people be like, why did he tell me that?
Oh, this,
like,
would be a perfect book for you,
okay,
then.
Okay, perfect. Yeah, usually it's movie related, but jellyfish could be a really fun
thing.
We had a friend that was a photographer, and so one day I just told him, like, I want to be a jellyfish. And so we just taped streamers to a bowl and went down to the waterfront, and I just stood there with it on my head.
That's hilarious. That's,
you know,
good.
Just make the reality you want to exist.
Yeah.
Sometimes that's being a jellyfish.
I really respect that. I think Portland can use more weird things like that.
I agree.
Yeah.
Which brings us to the final question,
mm-hmm.
and it's my favorite. What are your dreams like?
Oh, what are my dreams like? These days, my dreams are usually about the thing I was watching right before I was going to bed.
Sure.
So right now I'm rewatching Game of Thrones.
Oh.
So I think about that. Luckily, they haven't been like violent, awful dreams.
Right.
It's more like the visuals are like, the costumes are striking.
Lots of people in fur, right?
Yeah. Fur, lots of braids.
Braids.
Yeah.
I haven't seen it, but I'd imagine there's a lot of braids and fur.
Yeah, you're totally right.
Cool.
If you Google Game of Thrones, those are the kinds of pictures that come up, I'm sure.
Yeah, I never got into it. And if there's a dragon in something, my wife is right out of there. She's just not into anything with a dragon.
Weird.
Yeah, so we never watched it. But Jael, who we've mentioned on this podcast, mm-hmm. is a huge fan. Mm-hmm. And he's one of my favorite people because I love when people are passionate about something mm-hmm. and will just tell you about it, even if you don't know what they're talking about.
Huh.
And so he'll just be like, oh, man, on the episode today, there was a sword and it was on fire, like a flaming. I'm watching the show and I'm like, this show is a flaming sword. I love this. And I just love people that are passionate about things.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's a great thing for people, just to listen to other people who are passionate about things, not that are hurting people, but just yeah. like movies, music, things that are different.
I agree.
One time, Sarah got free tickets to see Bruce Springsteen or something because we had donated sauce to the Blazers. Anyway, it's not important. But I don't know any Bruce Springsteen songs, but we went there and wasn't that into the show. No offense to Bruce Springsteen, mm-hmm. but the people that were there, like that was their best day ever.
Aww.
And you're like watching people who, like, this is their moment their whole family is going to remember.
Right.
It's like, I don't know, you'd have to be pretty awful to not see a beauty in that.
Yeah, you know? It's fascinating. And it's just, it makes me smile to see other people smile.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just really cool. I feel like I'm the same as you.
Yeah.
I like seeing people excited about whatever it is. Yeah.
Sometimes it's Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
So in your dreams, there's people in very nice dresses.
Yeah, or I think that when I am not obsessively watching a TV show, my dreams range a lot.
Have you had jellyfish dreams?
I haven't had jellyfish dreams yet. And maybe it's because I haven't really been thinking about it visually. But yeah, I think
true.
I have dreams about TV shows, and I have dreams about, they're just so random, it's pointless to kind of say what they are.
Yeah, some people it's like really consistent.
Oh, really?
And yeah, for me it's not. It's really sporadic.
Really, yeah.
I don't remember a lot of my dreams, but I just wonder when someone's steeped in a profession like yours, it's so visual, if you would have, if it would be such a visual feast, your dreams, or if right. it's just your brain's like, I've been picturing things all day and I just don't want to.
Yeah, I don't think most of my dreams are like even job related, and I don't really think I do much art in dreams either. Mm. It's mostly like relationship oriented, like
Chester.
Not that. I mean, more like any kind of personal relationship. Yeah. Like I run into random people who I may or may not know, and then I like talk to them, and then sure. or like I'm on in a group who goes down a mountain or something, and then like that interactions between people, I guess, is kind of what I remember most about dreams.
Mm.
Yeah,
that's fascinating.
And Chester's often there. Yes.
Oh, cool. He's like rocking the cat's cradle or. I don't know.
The yo-yo.
The yo-yo moves have names, but I think they do.
Yeah, they do. They do have names, some of them, most of them. Yeah, but that's funny. I don't remember dreaming about him yo-yoing at all. He's usually just there as like a companion who's along for the ride, who he's I never, talk to sometimes.
He's never like, do you want to see a trick? And you're like, not now.
Yeah, that's more like real life.
Okay. I don't know. Every time I see people don't know what I'm talking about right now, but Chester, what's his... Chester Noir on Instagram?
Oh, yeah. His Instagram handle is Chester Noir. Yes. Yeah.
And he does like yo-yo videos, throw-yos. I don't know what
they
call it.
Yeah, you can call them yo-yos, or I think some people call them throws.
Throws.
Because
he does these elaborate moves that are kind of hypnotic.
Yeah.
I've lost a couple minutes not knowing that the video had looped, and I was just like, oh, yeah, he's really good at this like whole sequence. And then I'm like, oh, this is the same thing I've been watching.
Yeah.
It's just hypnotic.
It is hypnotic. For those of you also who don't know, there's a crazy yo-yo subculture out there where there's professional yo-yoers who do really crazy tricks.
Yeah.
They use yo-yos that are not fixed axle, which means that they keep spinning. And so like when you toss your yo-yo down and you pull it to pull it back up, they don't come back up. So that means they're constantly spinning. So the yo-yo, or throwers, as you sometimes call them, the throwers can just keep doing tricks until that thing stops spinning. And most of the time, it doesn't stop spinning for a really long time.
Wow.
Yeah. It's crazy.
Yeah. Okay. That sounds like something for another episode.
Yes, it does.
Well, any final thoughts for the ambulance?
No, but I do want to say that I did enjoy watching the movie. It was really fun.
Great.
Even though it has its weird, like, aged things about it.
Yeah.
I think it's good, and I would recommend it. To comic book artists especially, because it's crazy to see our profession in a show.
Yeah, and it's a weird placement in it. Like,
yeah.
It's just sort of the profession he has, and then he does draw the weird picture, but it's not like... he has to
draw
that picture.
Like, he just is a character who happens to be a comic book artist, which is nice.
It's kind of a human way to be portrayed, I guess.
It is.
A profession. That's kind of nice.
Yeah.
The Exterminator, not so much in that episode. But, well, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a delight.
Watching The Ambulance.
Oh, it was my pleasure. It was great.
Sleepless 2 just came out, so people can track that down. Again, thank you for being here.
Yes, thank you.
Links to our guest and topics of the conversation are up on the website vh-us.com. Please share our episode with anyone who you think would be interested. Rate, review, and what have you on your preferred platforms. If you would like to follow along visually, our Instagram is vh.us. If you're going to be in Portland, Oregon, or you live in Portland, Oregon, and you would like to be a guest, then please put guest and your profession in the heading of the email. If you'd like to recommend a movie, then please put movie and the title in the heading. Thank you for listening. I'd also like to thank my engineer, JL, and my producer, Wade Allen, and of course, my amazing wife, Sarah Marshall. Until next time, I'm Dirk Marshall, and this has been VHS.